I'm on the phone with Jillian Spies and Nathaniel Hoff, the husband and wife musical duo behind The Bergamot, which will be performing July 1st at Salt of the Earth in Fenville. Jillian and Nathaniel, thank you for being here.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
Let me just say, I love the name The Bergamot. It kind of reminds me of that sort of citrusy flavor you taste in teas like Earl Grey. Why The Bergamot?
Well, that is a question that we have had the great pleasure of answering for the last, I think, how many years now, since 2008. But we created the band name The Bergamot after the bergamot essential oil that is used to induce happiness and relieve stress, which is the same oil that you drink in Earl Grey tea and use on your body in soaps and lotions. But we did that because, well, one, we love the name and the way it sounded and the way it looked, and two, it really encapsulates our mission statement as a band and who we are as people.
What do you mean by that?
Well, the way we kind of run our band, we run it like, I guess kind of like a farm in a way. I mean, we both grew up in South Bend, Indiana, and we stay really true to our roots. We stay true to the music. And what I mean by that is from the lyrics, whatever we write about, it's happened to us or it's something that's really touched us over the years on our tours or in our relationship or in other relationships that we've seen. So it's all very honest and integrity filled. And when we are going about our lives, which is kind of can get crazy at some point, you know, on the line, we really just focus on what is pure, what is honest, what resonates within us. And it really matches up to bergamot because bergamot is natural. It's pure. We're very purist when we go in the recording studio as well. So it really aligns well with our lifestyle and the mission behind what we do. We create music to help people, to uplift them, to connect with them wherever they're at in their lives.
Right. There was a quote on your website that says, "Our world and individual lives are so complex these days that all we want to do is bring you something uplifting and honest." You know, do you feel like using a lot of production maybe strips away that honesty in music?
Yeah, we do. One of the big things that we've always felt is that, you know, in the era of major record labels and, you know, basically what we would call calculated gambles in the music industry, you know, we found that we wanted to produce music that we weren't using some sort of formulaic approach where it was like, okay, we're going to use, you know, this kind of like recycled melody with these recycled chords and produce, you know, a song that's overproduced and talks about these things. We wanted to try and do something where, sure, you know, the listener could hear the music and be able to kind of like keep along with it. So it wasn't like, you know, some sort of like progressive rock. But at the same time, we wanted to keep it so that it was digestible for the listener. But at the same time, like keep it really stripped down and produce it, but not overproduce it to the point where, you know, like anything in life, it seems these days, anything that goes into any sort of overproduction seems to come out synthetic, whether it be music or the food that we eat, or, you know, there's so much emphasis on like, let's, you know, if we can make the voice sound perfect, let's do it. And we're like, well, no, like we don't want it to sound perfect because that's not what you're going to see live. We want people to enjoy the music that they hear when they hear the recording, but at the same time, when they show up to a show, be like, wow, like I feel that I enjoyed not only the band, but I enjoyed what I thought I would hear when I came here, which was, you know, the voices of Jillian and I.
And, you know, it's interesting because a lot of publications have called you guys pop. And, you know, that's kind of a word that we usually associate with Britney Spears and, you know, stars like that. You know, do you own that word pop? Would you call yourselves pop? And do you think that you're reinventing that word?
I think that we do embrace the reinvention of the word pop. And what I mean by that is pop itself is a category of music that is a unique category in the way that it's defined not by the music that is within it. It's defined by the listeners who feel that it fits in a certain vein that can be described as pop. So when we look at our sound, we look at ourselves as being more heavily influenced from R&B, rock, soul, folk, those things. Now, if you look at what we do and then how our approach has kind of become, you know, and the sound that we've kind of our signature sound that is the Bergamot, which is a little bit of that, what I would almost call progressive pop or some people call it like anti-pop, you know, those type of things. It's a reinvention of the word because people feel like, yeah, I do feel this reaction to the music that is very universal and is very attainable and achievable and very relatable. But at the same time, it's not your standard pop. It's not your standard, like you said, Britney Spears or, you know, things like that, where it is, in those cases, put into that formulaic approach where we're just making music that we feel is really enjoyable and fun and upbeat. And I think the listeners and a lot of the critics would associate the word pop with it, but yet we never strive to make pop music. We're just kind of like, hey, these are our influences. And if pop seems to, like, encompass us and like take us in as, like, you know, the fans have said that we're popular enough to be in that category, then we take it. But I don't think pop is kind of like a moving target, you know, and so we never really try to make pop music. We just try to make the music that's true to us. And then, you know, as people have said, you know, that it does associate well in like this general pop category.
But there's definitely a folky element too. And, you know, I can really hear that in the ukulele parts, especially. You know, why did you make that decision to bring in the ukulele?
Well, for a few reasons. One, I have dabbled for the last 11 years in guitar, and I just got to give it up to guitarists because I feel like being a student and studying guitar under Nathaniel, and it never really quite was my thing. Now, I'm not saying in, you know, 10 years that could change, but I really wanted something a little fresh, something that sounded really just enjoyable, happy, and light, that would fit and easily weave in and out of our sound. So I picked up a ukulele, and it's been just a real joy being able to perform with it on stage, and it's something fun. And I think also, in general, you know, when you think ukulele, you think, or at least I think, you know, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And just, like, it just makes you feel good, you know. It just makes you feel like you're in Hawaii or just loving life, you know. So it's been a really fun instrument to weave into our music. And I think it's been a very compatible instrument to what we do.
Now, you said that Nathaniel actually helped to teach you guitar. And I think that I remember in an article that the way that the Bergamot started is that you guys actually were assigned to write a song together. Isn't that right?
Yes. So I have to do a shout out. I always do this. Her name is Mrs. Gunty, and she was the art teacher in our high school. One of the most energetic, lively, I think probably one of the most encouraging women I've ever met in my life. And she had Nathaniel in a class, and then she had me in a class, and she kind of heard the grapevine. You know, I used to sing. We went to a high school where they would do, you know, math and stuff. We went to a Catholic high school, so I would sing in that, and he used to play. And so one day she was just like, hey, you know what? There's this big writing competition coming up. Why don't you guys write a song together? And at this point, we had met each other at a bookstore within like a month before that, she asked us. And he was already starting to give me guitar lessons, but we'd never thought of doing a song together. And we're like, oh, that's a good idea. Like, maybe we'll do it, Mrs. Gunty. Kind of like, you're cute and encouraging, but I don't, you know, we've never done that. And I don't, that's kind of crazy in a way. And she kept pressing. I mean, the woman was, she taught us a lot about perseverance. She would ask every day. She would literally see me on one side of the hallway by my locker and Nathan and him walking towards me. She'd grab him by his shirt and say, go talk to her about writing a song. You guys should really do this. And so we owe so much to her because, you know, I don't know how many times it took her to ask, but maybe on the sixth time we were just like, all right, let's just do this to kind of, you know, she's not going to stop asking. So we should try and put something together. And that was definitely a game changer for us in our lives because we've been writing now together for almost 11 years. That was 10 years ago in 2003. So we owe a lot to her.
Wow. And so were you a couple at that time, or did that kind of develop over the years?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question because I think that a lot of duos, when people think of duos, they think of people who start off as a couple and then they're kind of like, hey, I can do this and you can, play this and we can kind of play some music together. The interesting thing about our story is that it really didn't start that way. It actually started with the music. So the music was a centerpiece for the building of our relationship. Which was a really interesting, at times, way to grow because, we had, we were friends and then we wrote this song and then it got featured, as like one of the top songs for that competition. So we had to travel together to go perform it in Indianapolis. And that was an interesting experience. And, and so we were really young and we didn't really, obviously we had no greater plans for, anything at that point other than, to attend college. And the music just kept kind of like growing and getting better, and we kind of were like growing closer together, and we felt like there was some chemistry there. And so that kind of like blossomed. And so our life 10 years later, and we realized how much songs and songwriting and music has played in our relationship, and it's pretty incredible to think about just some of the things that had happened over the years. And so, one of the things was that, when I had proposed to Jillian, I used song as a means to, speak to her. And so it was like that, those small things, it's these little things that we look back and realize that it really is a life lived in song. And so, to bring that to our records has been a really exciting process because we do bring a level of excitement because it's our lives. It's what we are. And we've kind of tried to live sheltered away from, those corporate influences and those labels with our heads buried in the sand. And that's been a really fun process to see how people have reacted to our music and what type of reaction they've had and what they classify it as. Because obviously going out into the music world, we really didn't, set our sights on a certain thing. We just were like, hey, this is us and this is what we do. And I hope people are on board. And lucky for us, I guess we've had a lot of people jump on board with us, which has been an incredible and amazing and humbling experience.
Right. And what was that competition that you guys entered the song in? What was that called?
It was called Project Excel, and
Okay.
as in the letter X and the letter L. And it was sponsored by State Farm. And what's crazy about it, did you tell her that? So we wrote this song together and we put it into the project. There were three rounds, and then the final round was if you made it to the top 10. And it definitely does it still exist? He said he's looking it up. But so our song made it through every single round, the first song we ever wrote, and we made it into the top 10 of the state of Indiana out of thousands of other high school students who submitted songs. And we
Wow.
got to perform on at the big grand finale where there was, hundreds of people on a big stage in front of judges. And I remember being absolutely terrified. And I remember just being like so nervous. I was shaking so bad. It's like, what if I forget all the words? I was only 15. I just turned, actually, at that point, I just was 15, getting ready to turn 16. And I just remember being so scared, but we did it. And we did not win. But I don't know. I don't know what happened to the rest of the people. I wish definitely check that out. But we did, we've had a long run at it, and we'll continue this indefinitely.
And getting back to what Nathaniel said about, the public's reaction and things like this, you guys just saw a pretty fantastic public reaction because you just got your third, is it your third album funded on Kickstarter just recently?
Yeah, so it's our fourth album. And yeah, it ended last night. Actually, it ended 16 hours ago, and it was successfully funded with 438 backers. We raised over $34,000, pushing into almost 35 in the nighttime as it ended. So we're still on cloud nine.
Yeah, it's pretty
We're
amazing.
pretty exhausted.
So,
But
Have you started recording yet, or were you kind of waiting for the money to roll in? Where are you guys in that process?
Yeah, we actually began breaking ground on the album in October of 2013, which doesn't, I mean, when we think back to the time in the studio, it doesn't seem like it was that long ago, but then when we look at a calendar, we realize it's actually been a little bit of time. So we had some money set aside, being that we run our own record label, we kind of had some cash flow, so we were able to set some money aside and we said, okay, you know, we really want to start this album so that when we begin our Kickstarter, we can also offer people, you know, a little bit of a taste, not only of what we've done in the past, which is obvious, you know, we wanted people to be able to tap into Static Flowers and Haven and Smile and kind of see what we were all about, but at the same time, kind of see the new edge of what we're doing, which kind of brings a little bit more, you know, we're working with a producer, being able to do some things that we haven't done before in the studio, which has been really exciting. But we broke ground in October, and we're really trying to, you know, hone in that indie rock sound that we've been really perfecting for us over the past, you know, couple of years and through touring and stuff like that. But the most exciting thing is that we've been able to also play a lot of these songs, like what we'll be doing here at Fenville at Salt of the Earth. We've been able to demo a lot of the new material for our fans. I would say that the album is roughly 85% written. There's a couple things that we want to tie up as far as lyrical and you know and musical, but it's basically all written now. We're going to be able to use this Kickstarter to really finance the rest of the album, and then obviously the most important aspect of any album, and anybody in the music industry knows, which is basically your PR that runs after the record's released, so that people know that you know what's going on, and we can kind of hopefully find some critics and things that can sink their teeth into what we're doing, and then let their fan base know, which you know it's just after the album's made, it's all about growth, which is the big challenging part of the music industry, especially on an indie label. But you do the best you can, and we're kind of learning, stumbling our way through that aspect of the music world. But it's been nonetheless very, very encouraging, you know, as we take our failing forward approach towards the music world, which has been really successful for us.
But when you were starting to write songs for this new album, you know, what were some of the goals that you had in mind? You know, what did you want to accomplish?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question. I had started a poetry blog called natehoff.com, where I started doing basically experimental poetry, everything from the very blasé to, you know, maybe social topics or things that I wanted to kind of touch upon. And I think that after reflecting on Static Flowers, we really felt like if you, in that indie rock flavor of music that we were creating, that, you know, maybe there wasn't as much music and that was speaking to people as far as like being able to talk about social issues and talk about things that are important to us, whether it be, you know, people being on their cell phones all the time or things like, you know, people so obsessed with like trying to make everything prepared for tomorrow, and really, you know, the fact that living in today is, you know, just as important. You know, things like that, and we felt like we really wanted to build an anthem around this idea of, you know, building a better social world that we all live in, and trying to be more conscientious of the world we live in general. And so that was a big thing that we really wanted to expand upon and grow with, was this concept of writing these songs that were more socially aware, you know, that were kind of tapping into those old folk traditions of Dylan and Seeger and those guys. But at the same time, to also, we also wanted to kind of revolutionize that aspect of folk, because I felt like a lot of the music that was coming out of the folk world was kind of out of touch with the social issues that young people are facing today. So we wanted to kind of take that bridge, and which was the whole concept behind the poetry blog and everything, is kind of to bridge this gap of, you know, young people and folk music, and just kind of like, okay, well, how can we create it so that the lyrics aren't out of touch with what young people are going through, and so that somebody can listen to a song and not realize it's folk, but at the same time, you're drawn in by the lyrics and say, hey, you know, I can relate with that. And, you know, people of all ages, but at the same time, you know, people that we're trying to reach and, you know, and that type of thing. So it's been a really interesting and exciting songwriting process as we went into as we went into tones, because we feel like so much of our lives right now are defined by tones, whether it be the tone of the TV as it's muted, or the tone of your cell phone as it's ringing, or the tone of, you know, when you receive a text or an email, all these tones that are going on. That's just kind of, you know, the concepts that we wanted to bring into this album and say something about it rather than just kind of sitting on the sideline.
Right. And I guess, what's an example of a song where you can really hear those tones?
Yeah. So we have a song, I actually sent you, and it's called Tones.
Oh,
and it's,
well, there we go.
One of the title tracks. It is the title track of the album. And that's a great example. The first line is, stop texting when we're talking and I'm spending this time with you. I feel like dying because I'm holding my breath for you. And it's a pretty abrasive song if you just read the lyrics. It's poetry in motion, what it is. Nathan wrote this. Actually, it came from a poem he wrote on his blog. And turned it into an amazing song, a very relevant song, a catchy song. And if you're just listening to it, it's one of those songs you just bop your head to, like, wow, this is upbeat and this is fun. But if you really, really, really listen to it and you start listening to the lyrics, you'll see, okay, this is interesting. There's a lot of stuff going on that I really relate to. Like, you know, I'm with this person right now, but they're not talking to me. They just are texting someone else. And how that can really be like emotionally like, oh man, this is a real bummer. You know, I'm not as important as their phone or whoever's on the other side of the phone. And it really highlights real things that are going on right now in our society.
Right.
And one of the other things that I wanted to say too about the song is that the hook of the song, when you get into like the, you know, when you look at the scientific aspect of the song and break it down and its forms and its points, the hook of the song actually occurs after the chorus, which, you know, looking at Motown, and there were different places to place your hook in a song. It wasn't always in the chorus, but a lot of times it would be in the chorus. And you look at folk, and sometimes it wasn't even a chorus. It was just actually a line in the verse. Well, this hook occurs after the chorus, at the line after the chorus. And the most important aspect of the whole song, if you listen to it, is this concept of please hang up and dial again. And that please hang up and dial again, when I was growing up and when we were young, you know, you'd pick up the phone or you'd leave it off the hook, or you'd dial the wrong number and you'd receive that, you know, that like, please hang up and dial again. And I thought that that concept of please hanging up and dialing again is like, that's kind of where we're at in our culture right now, is it's like, you know, we receive all these, you know, we're with people, but yet there's a complete disconnect. And so that saying, that tonal approach to music, that had really started to reveal itself in our culture, where it was like we felt this disconnection from each other. So in the physical sense, but also in the, you know, spiritual sense and everything. So that line, please hang up and dial again, and then the dial tone musically that occurs with that later in the song, like that's kind of the whole concept behind it, is like you've got this disconnection, but at the same time there's this interesting song that's going on, this kind of brewing something, and then it leads up to this hook, which is like, you know, so please hang up and dial again, which is the whole concept behind, you know, kind of literally behind the entire tones title and everything, that little section of the song defines so much of the broader music that we're creating with this album.
And talking a little bit about physical distance, you guys are actually calling me from Brooklyn, is that right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, when did you guys, you made that move in February, and so why did you decide that it was time to pick up and, you know, leave the Midwest?
So there's a few things that were going on. We, at that point, had been touring for 4 years, pretty much nonstop. And we toured through Europe, Germany, Belgium, Paris, France, Rome. We toured America 6 times. We'd had the prestige honor of opening up for All American Rejects, Young the Giant, Brad Paisley. And we'd seen a lot and had done a lot and still felt like we really didn't know it, you know it all, you know, myself very humbled by all of the things we had done, but still felt like there was so much more out there for us. And we had been looking for a while for a place to set down some roots at where we knew there were opportunities that were untapped, especially for our style of music and for who we are as people. And we started getting a lot of phone calls from New York starting about almost 9 months ago, different opportunities that were just coming up out of the blue. And we're just like, you know, this is crazy. Why are all these New York people calling us? It was great. But we're just like, this is so fascinating. You know, should we be there? Should we be there and working? And are there opportunities we just don't even know about? And so after a lot of talking, and we thought we were actually going to move to LA for a while, because we do love California and we definitely love the sunshine state. But we decided to definitely go to New York, and it was one of the best decisions of our life. I mean, the team that we're assembling there, the people that we're meeting, they're bright, they're ready to go, they're on fire. They are wanting to be able to do whatever they can, and we're all cross-sharing our talent. It's just unbelievable, and we really love it. Brooklyn, in particular, is just brilliant. I mean, it is the energy there, the things you see, it inspires you to be better. I mean, they make their own chocolate down the street. It's one of the best chocolate companies in the world, called Mast Brothers Chocolate. And I mean, you just like see this, you're just walking by, and it just inspires you to be the best you can be. It just pushes you hard.
Well, I'm glad that you're having a fun time over there, and that you're coming back to visit in Fenville at Salt of the Earth. On what day is that?
That is on Tuesday, July 1st at 8 p.m. And the reservations are highly recommended. It will fill up fast. And the number that you can call is 269-561-7258.
Well, thank you guys so much for talking with me.
Oh, it was our pleasure. Thanks so much.